At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Kick off summer with Memorial Day savings at Lowe's. Right now, get five Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. Plus, get up to 40% off select major appliances and save an extra $50 on every $500 you spend on select major appliances $396 or more. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/28. Mulch offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
The views and opinions expressed by individuals on the following program do not necessarily reflect those of the network, Guys Guy Radio, and its platforms.
It's Guys Guy Radio. Here's your host, Robert Manny.
Welcome to Guys Guys Radio. This is your host, Robert Manny, welcoming you to the show where men and women can be at their best and everyone wins, Guys Guys Radio. We're here to inform you, inspire you, empower you, and get you to think, feel, and who knows, maybe even act by virtue of the journeys, stories, experiences, and insights of the guests I bring you each and every week to the show. Once again, this week is no exception. Today, we're going to talk about boys and the boy crisis. My special guest is a return guest, Dr. Warren Farrell. He is an expert on men, expert on women, expert on relationships. He's world-renowned and considered one of the top 100 thought leaders in the world. I think the subject of boys and the boy crisis is one that's really paramount nowadays and right in front of us. I know I have a about-to-be 12-year-old son, and I coach, assistant coach his baseball team, and I take him to swimming, and I see how the boys interact with one another, and it's certainly seems a little bit different than when I grew up, where there was a lot of trash talking, we made fun of each other and stuff like that. The boys today seem a little bit more reserved in some ways, but maybe that's just my experience with my son. Some studies have been done that said men would want it to be reborn, what sex would they choose? And the vast majority of them said they'd want to be reborn as girls because they see in their eyes that society has been set up to help women. To me, I take it a little bit differently. I say this is the greatest time ever to be a man because it's a time where a man can be whoever he wants to be. But the flip side is this is also a time where it's never been less understood who men really are. So we're going to get into that, starting with boys and the book, The Boy Crisis, by Dr. Warren Farrell, right here on Guys Guys Radio. I think you're really going to enjoy our conversation today.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. I hope you're ready for the most dippable chicken in McDonald's history. Dip it in all the sauces. Dip it in that hot sauce in your bag. Dip it in your McFlurry. Your dip is your business. McCrispy strips at McDonald's.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. BetterHelp recently surveyed over 16,000 people and found that while 75% of people believe it's wise to seek support, only 27% of Americans are in therapy, and people stay silent to avoid being judged. BetterHelp has over 10 years of experience matching you with the right therapist. Because we're all better with help. Visit BetterHelp.com/stopthestigma for their first ever State of Stigma report, the latest in mental health research.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, Guys Guys Radio, it is the interview portion of our show, and I have a return guest, Warren Farrell, Dr. Warren Farrell, and we're going to talk about the book about young boys, and we're going to talk about his book, The Boy Crisis. It's a world-famous seminal book by Warren, and he was on the show recently, And we talked about his new book, Role Mate to Soulmate. But let me tell you a little bit about Warren before we introduce him. He's been chosen by the Financial Times of London as one of the world's top 100 thought leaders. His books are published in 19 languages. They include the New York Times bestseller, Why Men Are the Way They Are, and we'll do a segment on that, and the international bestseller, The Myth of Male Power. And he's also got The Boy Crisis. It came out in 2018, and it's been hailed worldwide because it's been a catalyst for bipartisan legislation for the father movement. And Dr. Farrell's recent book, Role Mate to Soulmate, The Seven Secrets to Lifelong Love, is out now. And it's based on his teaching couples communication for the past 30 years to more of 1,000 couples and psychologists. So welcome back to Guys, Guys Radio, Dr. Warren Farrell.
It's a pleasure to be back with you again.
So what we're going to talk about today is boys. And as we were talking kind of off camera, I have an 11-year-old son, and I've noticed that I'm an assistant coach for his baseball teams and have been for the last 3 years. And I know, and also I take him to swimming. So I see a lot of the interaction between boys. I pick him up at school. And I find that the young guys nowadays, they're not that verbal. They don't talk to each other that much. Am I off base there? In your findings, do you think since you wrote the book in 2018, has there been a change with young boys, or are things pretty much the same?
I think it is clear that, you know, what Jonathan Haidt has said, you know, about the anxiety that has been created with social media, and there has been a lot of, there has been more hesitancy. You see, whether it's boys or men, you'll see people at a table at dinner time, maybe eight people at a table, and six of them are looking at their iPhones. And so this is spreading through all generations. And it's certainly, and a lot of boys in particular feel that, especially when they're in school, which, you know, almost all, you know, boys are in school. And, in school, they're learning about, you know, toxic masculinity. And they're learning that the future is girls. The future is female. They're learning that they're part of the patriarchy. They're learning that that men they'll be blamed if they take initiatives too quickly, as being sexual harassers or date rapists even, or alternatively, if they take initiatives too slowly, they'll be called a wimp or they'll just be ignored. They see that the guys that are most successful with women are a very small percentage of the guys, which are, you know, the football players, the jocks, the really tall, good looking guys that are doing very well in many, many ways. And, you know, that might be 10-15% of the guys. And most of the women are interested in them. And it's not that the opposite isn't also true. The high percentage of men are interested in a smaller percentage of the most beautiful women. And so both sexes have that limitation, being addicted to the members of the other sex that are oftentimes the least capable of loving them. Because when you're sought off after by many, many people, you begin to become self-centered and you don't make the effort that you make when you are not sought after by many people. And so there is a lot of reason for boys to be just shutting up and, you know, honing in on social media lately. But you said you've observed this on this, you know, the swim team. And, you know, what are your observations with your son's turn?
My son's just about to turn 12, and everybody has a different personality, but he's not on social media. He doesn't have a phone. He reads all the time. He plays sports. But I notice when it's not just him, but on his team, he has a very good baseball team this year, great coaches. I'm one of the coaches, but the other three coaches are fabulous, and they're really teaching. But the kids, they don't talk to each other that much. They're very siloed. And I don't know how the other kids behave when they're on their free time, if they're playing video games, if they're on their phones or whatever. But when they're out, even in the baseball, you know, you're outdoors, you're playing a game, they don't talk to each other that much. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to be prodded on to cheer for each other when they're at the plate and all that. And they get into it and they're competitive. But I don't find them. When I was a kid, everybody, you couldn't shut us up. Everybody was always talking all the time. And these guys, and even with my son, I'll ask him, I pick him up from school. How was school? Great. Good. Anything happened? No, you know, you get a lot of those monosyllable responses. And I'm wondering, is that just today? Or is this part of the whole social scene that's happened with boys? Because it seems to be kind of like the and from your book, studies have shown, it seems like the world is tilted a little bit in terms of towards the females growing up, that the opportunities that they hadn't had before are there, that there's a lot of work to be done to catch them up. And not only have they caught up, they're getting their long overdue recognition, and they're surpassing boys in many ways, including education. So
yes, girls are surpassing boys in almost every single dimension, physical health, psychological, mental health, you know, boys. So for example, when boys and girls are 9 years of age, they rarely commit suicide and they do it about equally. But between the ages of 10 and 14, boys commit suicide at twice the rate of girls. Between the ages of 15 and 19, at four times the rate of girls. Between the ages of 20 and 25, at five times the rate of girls. And then as we become adult men, and men and women get to be the age of 85, males are 1,750% as likely to commit suicide as their female counterparts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't, you know, the percentage of people that I know who know that last statistic is about 1% at most. And they're usually the people that have read the Boy Crisis book or The Myth of Male Power. And so it's a very, we don't pay attention to that male, what boys are going through and the mental health problems they're having, the loneliness they're experiencing. We haven't been encouraged to speak up about the things that are going on inside of us. We keep those to ourselves. That's extremely, feminists accuse men of having toxic masculinity. Yes, we do have, there is a certain toxicity in masculinity because masculine, but it didn't come from male privilege and male power. It came from the obligation that men felt in each generation's war to be able to be willing to die in that generation's war. And in order to go to war and be willing to die, if the sergeant said to you, you know, let's say you were Jewish and the sergeant was mocking Jews, and you said, excuse me, officer, but I'm Jewish and you just mock Jews, that feels very anti-Semitic to me. The response would be, shut up, get down, do 10 push-ups. And if you keep speaking up like that, you'll do 20 or 30. And the other guys will say, oh, isn't it a poor little Jewish boy? Or something along those lines, and you'd get mocked. And the reason that you'd get mocked is because the war machine does not work effectively with squeaky wheels. And so we learned that if we were to be willing to be disposable and to kill or be killed, that we didn't have to worry about our feelings. We had to repress our feelings. Well, that is the ultimate, not in male privilege, but in male subservience and male disposability. And it's that that need to keep feelings to oneself that does create toxicity, but not because of male privilege or male power or a part of a patriarchy that is trying to create rules to benefit men at the expense of women, which is what boys learn that the patriarchy is today, that they're part of that patriarchy. And that's just a really makes the boys feel ashamed, and it makes them, if they don't express their feelings, they're told they're toxic. If they do express their feelings, they're told they're mansplaining. Mm-hmm. So the boys today are just caught between a rock and a hard place, or so they feel that way. I was doing a TV show for where they were filming me in Mill Valley, which is where I live, in the middle of a creek, and and I was talking about this exact issue. And at that time, a boy who looked like he was about high school age was walking by and on the pathway, and he saw all the camera crews around, and it was, you know, just sort of inquired with one of the producers, you know, what's happening here? And I said, are you in high school? And he said, yes. And to the producer's dismay, I asked him if he would come down and join me, and said, "I'm talking about guys your age. I want to make sure that that I'm either right or you tell me if I'm wrong about what I'm saying." And he just went into, it's I didn't tell him what I was saying, so I didn't bias the picture. And he went into just the type of thing I've been saying to you about, I go to a private boys' school in San Francisco. Here is what I learn about men: patriarchy, toxic masculinity, the future is female, that mansplaining, everything I just mentioned to you. And I said, "Well, so it feels to me," I said, "like your energy is heterosexual. Am I correct in that?" And he said, "Yes. I have a girlfriend." And I said, "Well, when you talk to your girlfriend about these things, what has she said? What does she say?" And he looked at me like, "I don't talk to my girlfriend about these things." And I said, "Why is that?" And he said, "Because she's a feminist, and she would break up with me, and she'd think I was some type of male chauvinist type of guy, and I'm not. But that's I would lose her love." And I said, "But is it really love if she doesn't hear you and understand you? Of course, you need to do the same for her, but this needs to be a two-way street." And he goes, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, are you thinking about potentially marrying her?" And he goes, "Yeah, could be." And I said, "Well, would you talk with her about these things before you married her?" I hadn't really thought
Yes,
about
consider
that
that.
much. And this is, and so this is just, I mean, anyone that knows even, Relationship 101 knows what a disaster this is, this is set up to be. And so this is what, when I interview guys in high school or college and talk to them about their life, this is the type of thing I hear all the time. And it's one of the reasons boys shut up. Compared to when you and I were, well, I'm older than you are, but when I was in high school, the commerce of adolescence, of male adolescence, was the trading of wit-covered put-downs. So if you and I were at the same team, I'd say, "Oh, Robert, isn't it sweet that you tried to get at bat and you didn't even have one str you didn't there was the worst pitcher in the league and you struck out. That's really funny, and then you got to first base and you needed to have somebody substitute for you. Well, I can substitute you. My sister can substitute for you, Robert." That type of thing. And that would, so what was the purpose of that wit-covered put-downs? The purpose of it was to make ourselves able to handle criticism without becoming defensive. We just had to learn to take it and not be disturbed by it. So if you're on a football team, each football player learns to put down the other football player on the other team, but the people, your coach teaches you how to not be thrown off guard by that other football players on the other team's criticism of you and mockery of you, because you could then be destroyed
That's
on
a
the
great
football
point.
field.
That's a great point. My special guest on Guys Guys Radio, Dr. Warren Farrell, we're talking about his seminal book, The Boy Crisis. And what you just said, I think, is so right on, because I notice with my son and other boys his age, they are very concerned about, and you see them on TV, you see the young boys, they all dress the same, and the young girls all dress the same now too. And we used to, when I was a kid, when you were a kid, we used to make fun of each other all the time. Now, some of it was you would never say some of the things we'd say then, but we got through it and we learned how to let things kind of bounce off. But now, because nobody does that trash talking to each other, if you do say something, it's like, oh, and there's a concern. My son, he seems very concerned about, like, I notice. He won't wear shirts now with logos on them. He wears a t-shirt to school every day. It's either, except if it's one where he's lifeguarding, his lifeguard t-shirt. That's it. Otherwise, gray t-shirt, white t-shirt, red t-shirt. That's it. Just will not vary. And I notice the other kids also. And then he's get they have this group where they sit at the same lunch table. And I don't even know if they talk to each other because he's got one of the kids at his lunch table is on his baseball team. Good player. So they're on the same team. I go to practice. I said, "Oh, there's Jackson," and they don't talk to each other.
And I said, did you talk to Jackson about the game? Because Jackson had the winning hit. My son closed out the game with the save on the mound. He's like, no. I said, do you guys talk to each other at lunch? He goes, no, but we're at the same table. Like, I don't understand how these young guys operate. And I guess it's a reaction to the social situation now. And it makes it, to me, it must be even tougher to be a boy now than it was when we were boys, Dr. Warren.
Oh, I think you're right. I mean, it's so, I mean, we all need social connection. Every data, good study that has ever been done talks about the importance in life of social connection. And boys, when they're learning that everything that they naturally said as boys, all this trading of wit-covered put-downs. So now if they say half those things, they're in trouble. If you call somebody gay, if you call somebody,
right.
If you just, you know, if you say, you know, you're so short, you're so, you know.
They're humiliated. They get humiliated very easily.
And so we have not learned to protect ourselves from being talked about negatively, and so we're walking around as children, like children that are overprotected from anything that is negative. Now, in my generation, it went too far the other way. The constantly putting each other down was you could not really get into. And the common denominator is that in this generation. And in my generation, boys were not talking about their feelings. They weren't saying, you know, how are you feeling about, I noticed you got a C on that test, which in my day, that was terrible. It's like an F today. Mm-hmm. How are you feeling about having gotten that C? Are you okay? I know you were trying, you worked hard, you studied at that. The empathy, that was not a part of boys today, and it's not a part of boys in my day. And that's really sad because
that's a great point too.
There's still a different type of heroic intelligence that is at odds with health intelligence. Mm-hmm. Everything it takes to be a hero represses one's feelings because to be a hero, you have to be willing to die and be disposable. And so in order to do that, like I was mentioning before, you have to deny your feelings and bottle them up. And what women end up getting for husbands is men who can do things, who are resilient, who aren't bothered, they are oftentimes bottling up feelings if their wife criticizes them about something, they feel that they've lost their wife's respect, and they know intuitively that a woman that doesn't respect you can't love you, and so they married for love, and now they're feeling criticized by the person they're married, but they don't talk about it and say I'm really hurt by that. They bottle it up, and this is not healthy at all.
Wow. The society has changed so much since you wrote your book. I remember when my book, The Guy's Guide to Love, came out. You know, we had big hopes for that. I wrote a TV series on it, had a screenplay, and then all of a sudden, boom! The Me Too movement came about, and it hit hard. And guys were like ducking because everybody was after them, and they didn't. And when I presented my work in Hollywood, they said, this is great, but now is not the time. About two straight white guys in New York City who work for advertising, their struggles. So I said, okay. So I put it aside. The world has changed dramatically since then, and that was 10 years ago because we had Me Too, and then we had then you had like Trump, and then you had like the tech bros, and then you went from the hero to the like the geeks with the money, the geek billionaires now. And now you've got this backlash going on in culture now where it's like you've got incels, you've got a real toxic masculinity where a lot of guys don't like women. And then you have the flip side where it's been like it is politically. You're blue or you're red and that's it. And it seems like this is a very unhealthy place for boys and girls to be in right now. If they can't really get along now, what's going to happen? But it seems like the landscape has changed dramatically. The pendulum has swung very wide, one way, back the other way. Is that accurate? And where are we going next?
No, it's not healthy for males, it's not healthy for females, but it's pretty healthy for chatbots.
It's true.
Anything that's not human is surviving. So yes, no, it's not healthy for either. And let's work with the hashtag MeToo for a moment. So if you're at all caring about women, I certainly am, then hashtag MeToo was a very important experience for women to be able to express feelings about things that they had kept repressed in their life. I know a number of women who, as a result of the hashtag MeToo, were able to speak up and say things that they had sort of kept to themselves before, and that's not healthy. And so I was a big fan of hashtag MeToo if hashtag MeToo had been a dialogue and not a monologue. But what we did with hashtag MeToo was we never created permission for men to tell their story. For each woman that is hurt by being a female in certain ways, there are men who are hurt by taking initiatives with women that felt they were either went too quickly or went too slowly. The men who felt like, why is it that I have to take all the sexual risks? That women have the option, but I have the expectation. Why is it that if I move too quickly, with one woman, that's really neat and she loves it. With another woman, I'm an oppressor, or I'm a sexual harasser. Why is it that women are not being trained to share the expectation of initiating and experiencing rejection? Do you know how much nervousness I go through and anxiety I go through to have a woman in the class that I'm attracted to, and I have to figure out the way to ask her out? Why doesn't she figure out the way to ask me out? And if she did ask me out, well, even if I wasn't interested, I'd be really empathetic with her because, and I'd treat her really nicely, and I might even go out with her even if I didn't like her because I know what it feels like to be rejected. But we're giving, and ironically, what we're doing is we're hurting women. We're hurting women by not training women to take risks of rejection at an early age. And as a result, they don't learn to prepare themselves to be entrepreneurs because entrepreneurs have to be trained very well in risk taking. The best training for risk taking is learning how to risk rejection when you're most vulnerable, when you're 14, 15, 16 years of age. So, boys, so the male story has not only not been told, it has been repressed. And that's what I hope the Boy Crisis book offers, is what is that male story? How are boys hurting? Why are they having such mental health problems? Why are they committing suicide? Why are they feeling so lonely, with left out? What is the importance of dads in this process and father involvement? I found when I did the research for when I submitted to the publisher of the Boy Crisis book, the proposal for it, I had 10 causes of the boy crisis that were outlined. And as I started researching the causes, I realized that most of them weren't really provable as causes. They were correlations, but they weren't so potent. The only one that rose to the level of being a probable cause of the boy crisis, was the was that it was dad deprivation. Boys who had minimal or no father involvement were far more likely to be vulnerable in more than 50 areas of development. They were far more likely to drop out of high school. They were far more likely to not have postponed gratification. Postponed gratification is the single biggest predictor of success or failure in life. Boys with who are not don't have a lot of father involvement were much less likely to have boundary enforcement that was strong, that as a result of that boundary enforcement forced them to do not what they wanted to do, but what they had to do. And doing what they had to do as opposed to what they wanted to do was part of what created the postponed gratification. And so there's for dozens and dozens, as I said, there are more than 50 different ways that boys that have a minimal amount of father involvement suffer. And so that is what needed to be known. And so the stories of these boys, the stories of men in custody battles who, when they lost their wife, also lost their children and had no purpose, and then they committed suicide. And everybody's talked about how terrible that was, but they didn't piece the patterns together that males who are in custody battles are 8 times as likely to commit suicide as females in custody battles, and how that hurts the children who don't have fathers. How that hurts the mothers that don't have the support of their former husbands, and how that hurts the fathers for not having any purpose, any connection, any love at a time in their life when they've lost their wife.
Amazing. My special guest on Guys Guys Radio, Dr. Warren Farrell. We're talking about the boy crisis and all the changes that have gone on leading up to when you wrote the book with John Gray, another wonderful mind and who has been a guest on Guys Guys Radio. But then what we've been talking about is kind of like some of the changes that have happened since the book came out, because everything just keeps changing so rapidly. And you mentioned something that I think is incredibly important to the whole paradigm, and that is the role of the dads. And I find that as a challenge myself, having a boy who's just about to turn 12 year old, and I'm an older dad. And right now I'm working at home. I used to go to the office for like 35 years, but he wasn't born yet. Now I don't. So he wonders like, what is he doing, I guess. But he's never asked me. He knows I'm doing my show now. He's off with his mom. But I've had to have the role of the enforcer to delay gratification, to make sure he knows what it is to be put on the spot. And my wife's a little more of the good cop. And now the roles have switched. And I'll tell you a quick story why. I've been pressing on him for in baseball because his team's setting him up to be the closer of the team, meaning you're going to be brought into tough situations because he has a good delivery and he's got a nice pitch. But he doesn't want to take lessons like a lot of the other kids do here in Southern California for baseball. And so it's tough. So every time he goes out there, the pressure gets dialed up because he doesn't want to practice. I have to get him to practice. And then so he gets in the game, and then they put him into the hottest session of the game. So we finally got into this game last week where I told him, I said, they're going to pitch you and it's going to be on you at the end of the game. And he did not want anything to do with that. And so the coach asked me, you think he can go in? I said, I don't know. I asked my son and he said, tomorrow. Let's say another game the next day. I'm like, I let him off the hook and the coach let him off the hook. And I said, they're going to put you in tomorrow, so you better be ready. Anyhow, fast forward, put him in the game. It's game is on the line. The last inning, he's out there. The skies open up. It's pouring rain. I'm looking at him. I'm like, this is an important point in his life because he's going to be really beat up himself if he doesn't come through. And if he comes through, it'll be release. And he's been hating on me because I've been trying to let him know that this is how things work. You have to do, if you don't want to do it for yourself, do it for the team, whatever. Everybody's got to pull together. Fortunately, he got through the inning and they won. And everybody ran off the mound and they had pizza and all of this stuff. And his relationship with me has been completely different since then. He had shut me out because I was saying, you got to practice. If you're going to do play, you've got to practice. And now I backed off and he's backed off and he's like, hey, dad. He wants to show me pictures of stuff that he like trains. He's into trains in a book or whatever. And his relationship with me has changed completely in just a week. Sorry for the long story, but I'm realizing that what you're saying about somebody has to set the boundaries and somebody has to kind of be, I don't want to say the bad guy, but the enforcer on things. It's important because now I see he'll always remember that moment where I told him it was coming. He knew it was coming. He had to do it. It was do or die, if you will, quote unquote. And he did it. And it like a big relief off him. And now it's like, now you got to get to the next level. You can't just rest on your laurels. But that's part of the stuff that I don't think his mom would have taught him. She teaches him so much other stuff. But this is a guy thing where we're playing a sport where it's all boys on the team, et cetera. And I think the role of the father in that situation, whether I handle it well or not, is incredibly important.
Well, A, you handle it really well, it sounds to me. And I'm really glad that changed. It does. And this is a really important difference. In the Boy Crisis book, I have a whole chapter on the differences between dad style parenting and mom style parenting. You probably saw that. And these are really important to remember because mom style parenting is much more risk averse, and that's positive in many ways. And dad style parenting is more take some risk, but obviously risks are those things that you can take too much of and be in trouble. Dad style parenting is far more likely to be boundary enforcement oriented. Mom style parenting is more likely to be boundary setting. So let me explain the difference there. So studies show that when moms are supervising children, they set earlier bedtimes than when dads supervise children. But when dads supervise children, the children actually get to bed earlier than when the moms supervise children. So how is that? So let's say moms say the bedtime is 8:30. The children come up, or one of the children come up to mom at 8:30 and say, "Oh, mom, I haven't done my homework." And mom goes, "Well, you spent an hour and a half talking on the phone with Judy, your girlfriend, and I told you to get off, and I warned you, but nevertheless, I don't want you to go into school tomorrow without doing your homework. So, okay, don't do that again." But then she does it again. And mom says the same thing, is more likely to say the same thing again. "I've been telling you not to do, that you should do that there, but no, you're right. I don't want you to go to school without doing your homework." So now what the girl has learned is I can successfully manipulate my mom by appealing to something where she concurs that she doesn't want, and it doesn't really make any difference if I continue talking on the phone to my girlfriend. In the final analysis, if I appeal to her about the homework, I can have both worlds. I can get to bed later. Dad is more likely to say the same thing the first time around, but also warn that if that happens again, they're going to go to school without doing their homework. Now, here's the difference. The second time the child comes to the dad and makes the excuse that I was, doing that, and the dad says, "I told you you were playing video games. I told you to get off the video games and do your homework. And you told me you were all finished with your homework. It didn't make any difference," or whatever. "So sorry, tomorrow you go into school without having to get your homework done. This is your choice. I'm not with that." So what happens with the child with the boy is, or the child that is with the dad supervising, is the dad the child does not get a chance to stay up later to do their homework and also get to play that video game. And so but what the important thing that's happening here is that the children with the dad are learning postponed gratification. They're learning that if I want to get the homework done, I need to postpone the gratification of playing that video game or talking with my best friend and get to the homework first. Then I get the reward of being able to when I get the homework done, I get the reward of being able to go back to the video game playing or back to talking with my girlfriend or boyfriend. And so that is and that postponed gratification, as I said, is the single biggest predictor of life's success or failure in life. When you don't have it, you don't get done with your homework. Then the teachers start getting in your back. You don't get good grades. You don't tend to be able to postpone gratification about anything else in order to become a good pitcher. You don't learn to do that practice again and again and again and again. You don't learn that the people who succeed as the Florida Gators or coach you talk when you need to work and work and work when nobody's watching in order to succeed when everybody's watching. That's not a quote from me. That's a quote from the coach on the NCAA finals.
Now, do you think this is a, is there a reason that this is a guy, a dad type thing versus a mom type thing? Because, that's one question. And the other question is, now that the roles have shifted a little bit, where God, it's not a patriarchy as much as it was in the past, does that change things in terms of the roles of dads? But in the first question is in general, why is it that the guys are the delayed gratification police versus the moms, or are they?
Well, first of all, it's usually the dads, and there are times when the moms are the enforcers and the dads are the the boundary setters. There are times when dads come home and feel I only have a for, if especially if the dad is working, you might feel like, I only have a few minutes, so I'm not going to sort of like be a boundary enforcer, and the mom is. But it's just more frequent that moms are likely to set the boundaries and dads enforce the boundaries. And the important thing is, so what's mom's best intent in setting boundaries? She wants to give the child a chance. She loves the child. She doesn't want the child to suffer. And she works from her empathy. But the problem is, and this is really important if you're a mom listening to this, the problem is that the children learn to manipulate the mom like that. And therefore, and this is the key, therefore they feel less respect for the mom. And that's terrible.
Yeah, that's
And
not good at all.
it's also not good for the child to not be able to lose when it doesn't do something that is healthy for her or him in the long run. If your son went out there and hadn't practiced and he had lost, and then he would have to deal with, all right, I lost, I didn't practice, I didn't do what dad said, and therefore he would learn that, and dad didn't protect me from that consequence. And so I have to, if I'm going to be a winner, I've got to go out there and practice. I've got to do it that way. And so moms tend to come more from their heart and their empathy, and dads more from, historically speaking, and I'm sure this has an epigenetic transference of, we were in the military, we knew we had to do what we had to do. And the hazardous jobs are handled by 93% of the people who die at work on the job are males in the hazardous jobs. And we've learned that we have to do those things that we have to do. And therefore, we require our children to do that. And we don't require back talk. We don't allow for back talk, and so on. And so, and again, sometimes this is reversed. My daughter and her son, my son-in-law, neither one of them set boundaries very well. But the one that does it better is the mom, more than the dad. And so, the boy is brilliant, but he has suffered from the lack of boundary enforcement. Hopefully that will change as he gets a little bit older.
Amazing. My special guest, Dr. Warren Farrell, on Guys, Guys Radio. We're talking about the boy crisis. It's interesting in this particular situation where my son had to, I knew he was going to be put into a very stressful situation, and I knew he would spiral downhill if he failed at that. My wife said, "Let him fail." She said he needs to learn that. And I said, now I have to get him down to practice, even if he doesn't want to do it. I have to convince him. So I found a way to coerce him into that. And afterwards I said, you glad you practiced? Because I know it takes a while to warm up and they don't give you a lot of time during the games. And he was like, yes, thank you, Dad. And then that's changed the relationship. He saw what it feels like to win. He saw what it feels like to do the work. And I also take him when it rains, he does outdoor swimming. Raining cold this winter was like for Southern California, it was pretty brutal. And
Yes, it
I
was.
said, let's go, let's just show up. Show up. You get in the water, you're swimming. Who cares if it's raining? As long as it's not lightning. You go. And he started doing that. And then that to me, I thought it was very important that showing up is you got to show up and you got to do the practice. You know, the greatest basketball players, why do they hit every foul shot? They take thousands of foul shots all the time from the line. It's just part of life. Anything you do, you have to, it's repetition. It's reps, reps, reps. When you run a marathon, I've run three marathons, and the marathon was run before the marathon because I had to do 20 miles 3 times in a row, 3 times over a safe period of time if I followed the proper protocol. And then when you run in the actual marathon, you know, I can do it. Because I just have to leg out those extra 6 miles, but I know I can put the 20 in. And I think that's really important for any young person growing up to know that you have to do the work. And it seems
Absolutely.
lacking today.
Well, first of all, really acknowledge your wife for, saying let him lose if he
She
if
did.
he
She
doesn't
was the
if he
one,
doesn't
yeah.
do the work. And so good for her. And that's a good example of good boundary enforcement. You did a little bit of boundary enforcement in the other way too, by just, so the two of you together sort of pushed him. to do the work. And this is one of the great things about sports. And by the way, sports really teaches you to do the work. And there's really three different types of sports that we should be really aware of for our kids, what I call the liberal arts of sports. One is the sports where you're practicing by yourself largely, so like gymnastics, tennis. There's a team,
Swimming, whatever.
but largely it's you alone, winning or losing. And then there's team sports that are really very important for people to learn how to work together with a team. And then there's a form of sports that's almost been left out of our consciousness recently, which is pickup team sports. If you want to provide for your son or your daughter training to be an entrepreneur, pickup team sports are really important. So on a basketball court, for example, if you and I are playing, and it's a pickup game, we look at each other, we size each other up, and maybe we if we look like we're the two best people, we'll divvy up on teams and we'll choose a team from that. And so then we'll decide, all right, should the basketball game be full court or half court? And we're making up the rules as we go along. That's what entrepreneurs do. They learn how to invent, create, and modify things, on the spot. And so it's really important that your children be involved in all three types of sports, the pickup team sports, organized sports, and the individual practice sports. They each create different strengths in our lives.
Dr. Warren Farrell, Guys Guys Radio. Fantastic. Well, thanks for being back on Guys Guys Radio. We'll see you again soon.
It's really a pleasure talking with you.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. I hope you're ready for the most dippable chicken in McDonald's history. Dip it in all the sauces. Dip it in that hot sauce in your bag. Dip it in your McFlurry. Your dip is your business. McCrispy strips at McDonald's.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What a fascinating conversation with Dr. Warren Farrell about boys and the boy crisis, and so much we unpacked and uncovered that there's so much more. You know, we made the show today about a conversation because I have a son right in that sweet spot of being a boy. He's 11, about to turn 12, and I'm seeing a lot of the things that he's going through and seeing how his friends behave and seeing how these young guys interact with each other. And it seems a little bit different than when I grew up, but it's all good. In my opinion, as I said at the beginning of the show, this could be the greatest time ever to be a boy and be a guy, because this is a time where men and boys have never had an opportunity to be whoever they want to be like they do now. However, it's also a time where it's never been less clear who they really are. And there are some challenges society-wise in terms of being a boy, because as we noticed from the data, suicide rates are higher among boys. The dropout rates higher among boys. The girls are doing so much better in school nowadays. You have the whole issue of toxic masculinity and incels and the whole 80-20 thing. So I think what we have to gain is really an understanding of the two sexes and how boys and girls can kind of get together and work it all out on their own, because it's a new frontier out there. It just keeps changing. But if we can teach our sons to be gentlemen, to be empathetic, to be kind, to be open, to learn new things, to be active, to get out of the house, not be stuck on their phone or their device all the time, to learn to read, to play music, to appreciate nature. I think that all works. And also the role of sports. A kid doesn't have to do sports, but I think there's a lot of benefits that can be taken away, because if it's a team sport, you learn about interacting with other people and working as a collective. And if it's an individual sport, you learn how to kind of do it on your own. Anyhow, fantastic conversation with Dr. Farrell. We're going to have him back. We're going to talk about why the men are the way they are. It's going to be another great conversation here on Guys Guys Radio. Okay, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Guys Guys Radio on UK Health Radio. We're back next week with another great show. And until then, like I always say, guys, finish first.